We've all had fierce and formidable women in our lives who have shaped who we are now. The Tech and Learning's Honor Roll podcast is dedicated to celebrating women who have shaped the education landscape more than you can possibly imagine. Who better to host this conversation than Drs. Keisha Ray and Frances Gibson, two fierce and formidable women who have been driving innovation in the field of the education world for more than 30 years. Please welcome our hosts, Drs. Keisha Ray and Frances Gibson.
Welcome to episode number 12 of Tech and Learning's Honor Roll, a podcast that celebrates fierce and formidable women in education. I'm Keisha Ray.
And I'm Frances Gibson. And we're here to introduce you to some of the most talented and extraordinary women impacting the field of education. And these women are influencing in a variety of ways, just like today's guest, Jenny Magera.
That's right, Frances. Jenny is Google's Global Head of Education Impact, best-selling author of Courageous Adventures, and founder of the education equity nonprofit, Our Voice Alliance. A lifelong educator, Jenny taught for over a decade and has also been an instructional coach, building leader, and district administrator. She served on the TWIG, TWG, for the U.S. Department of Education's National EdTech Plan, and has been featured on programs such as NBC's Education Nation, C-SPAN's Reimagining Education, TEDx, and NPR. And we're so happy to have you join us this week.
That is a lot of powerful information, Keisha. And Jenny, I don't know how familiar you are with our format, but each week we like to ask our questions to our guests in the format of M. In other words, things like, what do you see in the mirror? Your own reflections of yourself, considering your mentors that have impacted you, and looking at some movements that we should all be watching and perhaps a prediction around some maverick moments.
And we also like to catch any edubabble phrasing that we use to make sure our listeners understand exactly what is being said. So in your bio, we mentioned your best-selling book, Courageous Adventures. Can you share with our audience what an adventure is?
Yeah, so, you know, that whole thing was about trying to think about when you're a teacher, you always, it's such an interesting industry, education, where you come into it with a lot of prior schema, unlike other industries, right? So my husband's an attorney, and his only understanding of like what being an attorney was for like Law and Order or what he saw on TV. But for those of us who go into education, we have, you know, sometimes 18 years plus of like existing in schools as young people and learners ourselves. So we can go into it thinking like, oh, I know what it's going to be like to be a teacher because I've had almost two decades of like direct experience with teachers and like working in this ecosystem, but from the other side. And I think for those of us who become teachers, like we understand that it's a lot more rich and there's a lot more texture to it. And it's an adventure, right? So, you know, I remember my first year teaching as a grade four teacher on the south side of Chicago. And I'm like, oh, I know it, just what it's going to be like. I'm going to be just like my fourth grade teacher. And I'm going to just recreate her classroom. And I got it on day one. I was like, ooh, there's so much more intentionality and challenge and complexity that went into this like seemingly like effortless orchestra that she created to make that learning environment what it was. And adventures can be everything from like that first day of your first year teaching to you're a, you know, 10th year veteran teacher and you decide to try something new and take a leap, like bring one-to-one technology into your classroom or dig into culturally responsive education for the first time, try flipped classroom, just something new that is tangibly, seismically different from the way that you have always created a learning space. And that can be an adventure. So for me, an adventure is just like the art and science of teaching all like wrapped into one.
And it makes a seismic difference for students, as you said. And I can definitely look at the list of words that I just captured there, intention, challenge, these effortless orchestration of classroom experience. And I know that I have newfound appreciation definitely for that phrase. And I can imagine that our listeners are marinating in that thinking as well. So let's get started building on that definition and hear more about your story. So the first M is about models. So who are your role models and why?
Well, the first one that I think probably a lot of folks say on your show is my mom. And For so many reasons. She immigrated to the country when she was, you know, a young person, and when she was in grade school, didn't speak a lick of English, had to learn it. It was really challenging. And then just grew up into this like really self-assured, stereotype busting, like strong woman. She had to come overcome a lot, like being, you know, a woman in a time where there weren't a lot of women in leadership, and ended up being the director of human resources at Charles Schwab and like running a giant department. She, as an East Asian woman, as a Korean American, like overcoming language barriers, stereotype bias, you know, the fact that like, you know, especially, you know, Korean Americans, East Asians have this stereotype threat of being subservient and quiet and not really speaking. My mother was definitely not afraid to use her voice and to be seen in a space. I remember when she first met my boyfriend, my now husband, she was on a business trip to New York City where I was going to college. We were going up to the second floor of her hotel where the lobby was, and I thought we were all going to have a cup of coffee together. She pressed 7 where her room was, handed me her room key, and dragged him off the elevator and interviewed him for an hour about why he was worthy to date me. Like, she's a director of HR at Charles Schwab, at like an investment company. So she like gave him like a full on interview. She asked him what his opinions of women in the workplace were, like what his, how he was going to treat me like an individual and with respect. I was, you know, 20 years old, dating this boy who I was like, he's the love of my life. I want to move to Chicago with him. And my mother did this all because she was like, I believe that this is what's right, and was unapologetic about her point of view, about her strength, her voice. And much to my deep embarrassment in that moment, I was so mad at her. I was like, he's going to break up with me now. He didn't, obviously. We're together still. We have a kid. But like, she's my role model because she was so unapologetically her. And if someone told her she couldn't, or that it wasn't okay, I don't think she even responded. She's like, I'm going to do it anyway, because I know what's right. And so for me, like, that's something I still am not always comfortable with, but I always think like, what would my mom do?
Oh my gosh. What, and it sounds like the authenticity that your mom has within her own kind of womanhood, she's lent to you, right? And I'm sure you're going to lend to your children. And you've demonstrated that in your ability to kind of be a public speaker, and the messages that you share on such a tremendous platform, especially the TEDx platform. So I thought I would borrow from a TEDx publication on mentorship before I ask you our next question. This piece outlines 5 types of mentors: master of craft, champion of your cause, a co-pilot, an anchor, and a reverse mentor who learns from her mentees. So can you share a little about your mentors and maybe what category they might fall in?
You know, it's interesting. When I think about this question, I think about my first principal or boss who hired me to my very first teaching role, and her name's Amy Rome. And, you know, I was 21 years old, straight out of college. I remember sitting in the interview and I misunderstood one of the questions and answered it in a really crazy, like, if I had been interviewing myself, I would have been like, nope, cross that name off the list. And it was embarrassing how badly I messed up the question. But she just like kind of looked at me and she's like, I don't think you heard the question. Why don't you try again? And like gave me that opportunity. And even though I was like deeply, you know, like, oh, I did not get that job, she coached me even through the interview and saw something in me. And that has been kind of the way that she has been my entire life. It's so interesting because she went on from being my first principal to she moved on to a director role in the school district and brought me with her. And I became an instructional like tech coordinator under her. So she was my boss for like, I think over a decade. But then mom, right around then, my mom passed away, my first role model. She had cancer and I lost her back in 2012. And Amy had already been kind of like she used to tease that she was my work mom because she and my mother had like this very similar, like, no nonsense. We do what we think is right. And like the world and society can apologize to us. We're not apologizing to them. And they'd met, my mother had flown up to Chicago from Orlando where I grew up and had met Amy. And so like, you could kind of tell that they were like, kind of, they had this synergy with the way that they saw the world. And so Amy used to joke that she was my work mom. She's like, you know, your mom can be your life mom, but I'm your work mom. And then when my mom passed away, Amy really like went into that, to that space. And what was interesting is when you named those five types of mentors, she really evolved to being so much more than kind of like that subject matter expert of like, hey, you didn't get that interview question right. Or like, hey, you need to rethink that strategy you're using in your classroom, to again, like being my co-pilot, being like, what's best for you? Like, you know, what is the next step in your career? Coaching me, you know, she even coached me when I left working for her and taking my next job. And, you know, the reverse mentorship, like now we're in spaces where like I'm bringing her into spaces now that I'm at Google, and like she's learning about technology and digging into that. She totally champions my cause. She's always like, you know, I took a job and she's like, is that really what's right for you? I think you're bigger than that. I think that I can't, you know, I feel like that's going to box you in. And so she really helped. I didn't have that faith in me, and I didn't have like that clear vision and strategic next step in my career. And she helped me with that. And then in terms of Anchor, like, because she's my, like, I don't even know if it's like a work mom. She's like a surrogate mother figure to me now, even though she's not old enough to be, I have to name that. She is young and snappy, but like in my life, she kind of takes on that like hard love for me. So she'll give it to me straight. Like, Jenny, you're saying a lot of fluff right now. I'm not hearing a lot of meat here. Like, what are you really trying to say? What are you really trying to do? And so she'll call me out when I'm not being authentic or not doing something that's 100% me or on track. And I need that. And that's what I think, that's what a mom does. A mom is there to give you that tough love. So she's always anchoring me to what's best. And so I don't know. I feel like this is just a love letter to Amy Rome and my mom, but like the two mom figures there, but it's so true.
So true, as you said. And as you think about that love, you mentioned the idea of them being coaches to you, which are really mediators of thinking. So they're radiating back to you who you are. And my hunch is that's why you feel that love from your work mom and how it connects with your personal mom that you love so much. You know, you have done so much to help us rethink things, whether it's new language or new ways of engaging in professional learning to facilitate more relevant experiences for our teachers and for ourselves. And I'm curious, when you look in the mirror, what do you see? And when did you notice that the person looking back at you is the leader in you?
That one's so hard. I think to this day, sometimes I don't see it. It depends on the day and what I'm feeling and where I'm at. It's interesting. I think through my life, I had moments of feeling like a leader. And I think, again, it's because I was raised by such a strong woman that I never had to question that if it was in me, it's just like when it came out kind of thing. So I remember like being in fourth grade and being like the captain of the Florida Quiz Bowl team. And our team won. I had like this very like physical, like tangible memory of being, I actually thought about this recently, of being in the auditorium, and like, I could even smell like that, like industrial carpet, and like my team not feeling super great about it. And I remember being 9 years old and giving my friends a pep talk and being like, we're going to do this. We're going to win. And like my friend who is a little bit like less confident about it being like, okay, Jenny, let's do it. And feeling like I did it. I inspired someone. I'm a leader. And I remember thinking that at 9 years old. You know, I remember Amy giving me the opportunity when I was just a second year teacher to sit on an interview panel to help screen candidates to be a co-teacher on our team. We had an opening for another fourth grade teacher, and she really believed in like democratic decision making. So she had everyone on the team interview candidates, which I was like, oh, look at me. I'm 22 years old and interviewing people and looking at resumes. I am a leader. I remember like being in my first leadership role, being my grade level cycle team leader and having to write the agenda for the team the first time and problem solve for my colleagues and represent their voices at a leadership level. And I was like, I'm a leader. So there were these moments in my life where I remember feeling like a leader, and it was always in relation to something I was doing or some recognition or that someone was like recognizing leadership in me, a very relational piece of it. But again, like, you know, I'm technically a leader now. I lead a large team at Google, and I have, you know, the title that says I'm a leader, but sometimes I don't always feel like it. So it definitely ebbs and flows, and it's about the work that you're doing and the way that you're interacting with other individuals.
And I think that word leadership, sometimes it always causes us to pause because it feels like a tremendous responsibility, but it's also a tremendous opportunity to kind of rise to the occasion, so to speak. Transitioning just a little bit, the one organization notes that throughout history and across cultures, women and girls have faced innumerable challenges and injustice, and yet women overcame adversity, broke through barriers, and changed the world. And with the recent murders of Asian women in my hometown of Woodstock, it's definitely the time to call out the injustice of women who are representing all backgrounds and to recognize women like you, Jenny, who are making a tremendous influence in the world and overcoming unbelievable barriers that a lot of people don't even see you overcome. So how do you think women are changing the world today?
You know, I think I think the women that are changing the world and the way that they're changing the world is about no longer changing ourselves to fit the world. I don't want to call folks out of their name, but there are some leaders out there who really talk about like how women can have it all. And it's about like really like just like having a stiffer upper lip and trying harder and like putting more effort into it. And the cognitive dissonance that I have with that, or what doesn't always sit right with me, is the message I hear, at least when I hear it, I'm not talking about the intent of the individuals who share this message, but the way I receive it is that I should change myself for the world. That if I, as a mother, as a woman, as a sister, a daughter, just like act more like a man, if I just, you know, put in more effort, roll up my sleeves and get it done, then I can be successful and I can have it all. And I don't want to have to choose. I don't think I should have to choose as a woman. I think that my womanhood and the fact that I am a woman brings more to the table, my perspective, the care and empathy that I have as someone who has carried and birthed a child, and that the unique biological mechanisms of like me having to raise her, having to nurse her throughout the day, the fact that when I was actively, I wasn't one of those women who was fortunate to be able to lactate on will. I know not all women can do that. And I struggled making milk. Yeah. I didn't want to talk about that at work. I didn't want to use the word lactation and milk on a public podcast or at my job. And so I would hide when I had to nurse or when I had to pump. I went back to work after 8 weeks because I didn't want my all male like counterparts to think that I was doing less or I was weaker than them on the leadership team. And I regret that. And about halfway into my lactation and milk creating journey with my daughter, I was like, you know what? Why am I hiding this? There are other women on my team who are going through this. I knew that for a fact. And I'm creating a model where it's not okay to be your full self, or it's not okay to be a woman. And so then I just started putting blocks on my calendar that said pumping, nursing. And if they couldn't, for whatever reason, move meetings around it, I showed up in a wrap with my Medela pump, and I just sat on that call with for 30 minutes. I didn't mute my microphone. I worked remotely then before COVID too. And I just sat there with my camera on, with my Medela pumping loud. And I was like, all right, guys, like what's going on? You all knew I had to pump for 30 minutes right now. You said that this was a non-negotiable. So is this. Let's make this happen. And what I found was it wasn't just clear, like changing structures, and like some folks were really uncomfortable, and legally they couldn't stop me, but we had to have conversations about like, what does that mean? And so what then happened is we started having 30 minute breaks throughout the day where folks could do, but what was nice was like, women weren't the only ones who were benefiting from it. There were other people who were like, I need to walk a dog, go exercise, take a walk, just have a minute for some psychological safety from not having back-to-back meetings, eat food, go to the doctor. Like, it just created more space for people to be more human when I started showing up and pushing the status quo. And I think that because half of us are women in the world, there's a power to being a majority minority, whereas like there's fewer Asians, fewer Black and Latinx folks, but women are a majority minority. And so I think we have the power of numbers to stand up and to support each other. And so I think if any minority group are going to start pushing on systemic hierarchies that aren't designed for all, I think women are the ones who really need to start pushing on it and saying like, see my whole self. And this is something I want to share later too, but you know, I've started to imbue the mantra of like, I'm not going to change for the world needs to change for me, which is how my mother lived her life, her short and beautiful life, which is how my mentor lives her life. And it's how I want my daughter to live her life.
Well, you definitely have an all means all strategy, and we all need to embrace that. You know, I'm sure Keisha and I just want to ensure that everybody hears this message that you just related about being your full self. And you can use terms like lactation and milk on our podcast any day, any time. And I think we have a new sound for power in our organizations now.
So happy.
Absolutely. And, you know, you've demonstrated that you are clearly a maverick. And are there other mavericks that we should be watching that you think are disturbing the system and that we should be learning from?
Yeah, you know, the first person who like helped me rethink that approach is Anne-Marie Slaughter. She wrote a piece in The Atlantic, and I think it was 2012, called Why Women Still Can't Have It All. And I read it and it was like she wrote it as a letter to me. And she talks about this. She talks about hiding her gynecological appointments from her boss and just saying like, oh, like I'm not feeling well, rather than saying like, I have a doctor's appointment, because she didn't want to remind her boss about her womanhood and her otherness, right? About feeling like forced to change, to like choose between the desire to be a mom and a woman and the desire to be a career leader. And, you know, look, she's the CEO of New America. Like she's an international attorney. Like she's literally like climbed the ranks to like the highest levels of leadership as a woman, but is very outspoken about the reason why is because she's embraced her womanhood and brought it with her to those spaces as a leader. And like that for me is really important. I don't always agree with her policy and like exactly what she's doing, but that unapologetic full self is very inspiring to me. And she's the person who really first inspired me to do it professionally. My mother was always like, you know, be your full self. My boss was like that. But when Anne-Marie wrote that piece, I was like, yeah, like I can be myself and a strong leader at the same time.
You know, and speaking of full self, the whole social emotional aspect of that is kind of what rounds us out, right? And that's a huge highlight in our field today as we're kind of hopefully overcoming this pandemic. My husband's an MD and he's like, we're not done yet, sister. I'm like, dang it, I've got my second shot scheduled. But we're recognizing the fragility of, of our kids' spirits and teachers' spirits and leaders' spirits. And many of these people are women. Many of our leaders in these spaces today are women who have been managing, you know, schools and districts. And so what should we be mindful of, and what advice might we give for women to take care of themselves?
I think two things. One is no two women's experiences are exactly the same. You know, we all talk about intersectionality, and, you know, I see the three women who are on this conversation right now, each of us have our own intersectionality, and I can't know all of it. Like I can look at you and I can assume some things, but that would be assumptive, right? You know, you could look at me and say, okay, she's a woman. I've named that I'm a mother. I'm Korean American. And all of those, that texture of who I am impacts my womanhood and my identity, right? So I think understanding that like all there's layers to us that we can't see about each other, and we have to have empathy for each other and stand up for one another. And then two, we need to model balance. I think as women, we're constantly like trying to do more, show more. I think a lot of us feel like we have this need to like prove our value and our ability. And so sometimes it's like a kind of a scramble or a race to the top, where we're struggling to show like, look at how capable I am. So I'm going to stay later and work harder than everyone else in this organization to prove my worthiness because of this imposter syndrome that I have deep inside of like, what if I don't belong? Or what if they figure out that I'm not good enough for this leadership role? But instead, having the confidence to model balance, because the harder I work, the later I stay, I'm raising the bar for fellow women, because then, you know, the two of you now have to stay later because Jenny's staying later. So instead, as a leader, I've started to model balance. I put no meeting blocks when I'm picking up my daughter, when I'm having dinner with my family, when I'm giving her a bath in the morning, when I'm having, I sit down and I have breakfast with her. We cook eggs together, and I put blocks that says what it is. It says like cooking breakfast with Lucy, having dinner, bath time. And I'm modeling that, I'm reserving and honoring those times with my family because they're values to me. And so when they see me as a leader doing it, it normalizes it, not just for the women on my team, but from everyone, no matter what gender identity that they align themselves with or that they self-identify as, which I think is really, really important. We need to normalize that modeling from a leadership level so it doesn't, so others don't feel like they have to always do more to be perceived as doing enough.
That is powerful advice. And in fact, this is SEL week across the nation. And so what you're modeling for us is the SEL advice and the confidence to do that work as adults as well. I believe there's a congressional hearing tomorrow. So maybe we can cut and paste this message and send it on to our leaders from the leaders here today. You know, we're going to transition now to a little game. It's a game of insight that we play with our guests. It's a quick finish the sentence moment, and this will give us even more insights and ways to percolate around some of the thinking that you've shared today. So this first one, are you ready? Mm-hmm. Okay. An event that changed my worldview.
My daughter being born.
Yeah, I had that same experience, Jenny, and it absolutely transformed my life. Frances knows all too well how much it does, because now we only get to talk after I put her to bed at night. Oh, how about this one? I became a stronger person after.
I lost my mom. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you've become a mom to so many in your work, and you continue to model her grace and her love in concentric circles around the world. There's no doubt about that. Doubt about that. How about this one? My life improved when I
became a teacher, for sure. My lifelong dream.
What a great game. And I loved your answers. And I think they resonate with so many of our listeners. And I really appreciate you just being here today and sharing, you know, your journey with all of our listeners and your words of wisdom and encouragement to our listeners. And I've learned so much from you today. I've learned that you're a boss, that you have set standards in your workplace that are modeling for future generations of women, kind of what expectations can be when you're in a leadership role. I've learned that you have kind of, just like your mom, you've stood your ground in your place as a mother, a working mother, and you've created tremendous balance. And I think I agree with you. That's so important. I want my daughter to see me as a working mom, but I want her to feel like I'm 100% there for her too. So I think you've definitely modeled that. And I think you've modeled a tenderness in that approach, because you didn't go in guns a-blazing. You just subtly kind of, you know, demonstrated, this is how I am. This is what you get when you get Jenny. So I, and I'm sure our listeners have learned more than me from your wise words.
Thank you so much for having me on. It was a joy to speak with you both. And I'm excited. I'm excited to learn more from your future guests as well. Thank you so much. Yeah.
Well, Jenny, we can't begin to thank you enough for the wisdom, the texture you've created in your story for us to examine more closely around the confidence of being leader, and really looking through that lens of intersectionality and your own positionality in your work is so incredibly important, especially as we re-examine the world. And we always lead with a coaching question. So this is one for you to continue pondering in your role and for our listeners. And so our coaching question today is, how might you be a force for the world's reexamination. And I'm going to add a second one, Keisha, because I found this incredibly powerful in our self-care talk. And that is, how might you model and normalize self-care?
That's amazing. Great questions. Frances always summarizes our time together with a coaching question to encourage our audience to continue the conversation on our Twitter, through Twitter, with our hashtag TL Honor Roll. So we can't thank Jenny enough for joining us today, spending a little bit of time with us, sharing your incredible, incredible journey.
Absolutely. And we want each and every one of you to know how much we appreciate you. We hope that you'll take a walk with this podcast and do some self-care yourself and find a way for this message to lead and inspire others and maybe be a work mom to the next Jenny in your system.
Absolutely. Join us for our next podcast where we're going to highlight another Shero in education. And don't forget to answer that coaching question on Twitter with our hashtag TL Honor Roll, R-O-L-E, because that's what we are as incredible women, is role models. Until then,
be fierce
and be formidable.
The Tech and Learning's Honor Roll podcast is produced by Keisha Ray, Frances Gibson, and Christine Weiser. Audio production by Mitchell Tulin and AV Nation. Tech and Learning's Honor Roll theme music is by Madison Van Gundy. Find more episodes on techlearning.com and follow us at hashtag TL Honor Roll. That's TL Honor, R-O-L-E.